President Barack Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin met privately on the sidelines of the G20 Economic Summit today. The subject was, you guessed it, Syria. Obama is pushing for a military strike against the Assad regime for its alleged use of chemical weapons. Putin says there's no firm evidence of that, and he opposes any action outside the United Nations Security Council. President Obama spoke with reporters after their meeting.
Syria's escalating use of chemical weapons threatens its neighbors, Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, Israel. It threatens to further destabilize the Middle East. It increases the risk that these weapons will fall into the hands of terrorist groups. But more broadly, it threatens to unravel the international norm against chemical weapons embraced by 189 nations, and those nations represent 98% of the world's people.
Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist. He's watching all of this from London. And Edward, President Obama says he and Vladimir Putin essentially have agreed to disagree over Syria. But how do you think their meeting truly went?
I think it would have been fairly acrimonious. And I'm not sure what's worse than agreeing to disagree. I guess it's disagreeing to disagree. But it's quite clear that the political relations between Russia and America are worse than they've been for 25 years. The two leaders don't like each other personally. Their body language shows that. And they disagree with each other and think that the other is acting out of quite bad motives, that Mr. Putin thinks that Mr. Obama is trying to march around the world, knocking over, toppling regimes that he doesn't like, and that whenever America does this, it works very badly. And Mr. Obama thinks, rightly in my view, that there's the catastrophe this century happening in Syria with chemical weapons being used on top of it, and Russia's just standing on the sidelines enjoying the disarray, but not contributing to any sort of solution.
But take us inside the mind of Russian leadership a little bit more, because, I mean, does Vladimir Putin, rather than just posturing, genuinely believe that a U.S. strike on Syria would further destabilize the region and possibly lead to a broader international conflict?
I think he doesn't want the Assad regime to fall. He quite likes instability, because instability in the Middle East means higher oil prices, and higher oil prices means free money for Russia as a big oil producer. I think he doesn't like the idea of Western diplomacy being successful, either with or without United Nations backing, because he's afraid that once you start toppling dictators and authoritarian regimes, where's it going to stop? It might carry on through the former Soviet Union and even end up on Red Square. So he just doesn't like the idea that people power and Western pressure lead to regime change. I think he also would say, but with perhaps some justice, that the Arab Spring hasn't had a terribly good outcome. If you look at Libya or at Egypt or any of the other countries, even Tunisia, the results have been pretty messy and disappointing. So he might say that before going and toppling these regimes, you should think a bit more about what happens afterwards. And there's also a little bit of direct self-interest that Syria is a country where Russia's got a naval base. In fact, its only naval base outside the former Soviet Union, which is symbolically important. And it's a country that Russia sold quite a lot of weapons to. And so that's another reason for the regime to be kept in power.
So in addition, what are we to make of reports that another Russian ship is headed towards the region today?
The Russian Navy is not a real Navy in the way that the Sixth Fleet is a real Navy. It can't actually go and project power with a great bubble of air superiority and electronic countermeasures and all sorts of missiles and all the other things that a modern Navy uses to keep itself safe and effective. It's really more of a sort of symbolic Navy, and it can sail around off the coast of Syria, and in the end it's part of a game of diplomatic bluff. They can say, if you're going to do this, you're going to have to shoot at us first, and do you really want to risk World War III? Because although Russia doesn't have a navy, it is still a nuclear superpower. So it's a kind of it's a piece on the board for them, but it's not a real naval force in the way that America has a real navy.
Edward, today the president took several questions from reporters at the G20. Twice he was asked, what would he do if Congress does not approve a resolution for U.S. military action in Syria? And the president said, quote, I'm not going to play parlor games about whether or not the resolution will pass in Congress. But say it doesn't, and the president does go ahead with military action, what might the implication be amongst the international community if that happens?
I think it's very funny the way politicians always say they're not going to answer hypotheticals, and yet it's a hypothetical they actually want to answer, and then they seem very happy to answer it. I think that there's a problem here, which is that you have a... obviously, you've got the War Powers Act and all the safeguards in the American Constitution political setup to constrain executive power. On the other hand, you do need the ability of the president to respond if the country's attacked and in conditions of crisis. And I think that the thing that may be worrying some of America's allies around the world is this going to be a precedent that whenever a difficult problem comes up, we go to Congress first? What would happen, for example, if Russia started threatening the Baltic states, who are NATO members and have the expectation of support from other NATO members, including including United States? Does this mean that every crisis now goes to Congress and maybe nothing will happen for a couple of weeks while the votes are being arm-twisted into place? And that would introduce, I think, a damaging element of uncertainty into all sorts of calculations, whether it's in the Middle East or in Europe or indeed in Asia. So I think everyone's watching quite closely to see what the outcome of this gambit or gamble by the president's going to be.
Well, Edward Lucas is international editor for The Economist, speaking to us from London. Edward, many thanks.
Thank you.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.